Welcome everyone to the close of the week here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. That is Brett Ehrlich with the purple hair. Brett, how's it
going? What up? Purple hair, everybody. You look like ninja. It's an homage to Sarah Jessica Parker when she was in the movie Flight of the Navigator. She came back from a Twisted Sister concert with purple hair. That's why I do it.
She was in Flight of the Navigator?
Yeah, she was the attendant at the hospital.
Interesting. I kind of want to watch that again. Anyway, I am not going to allow you to take me down a rabbit hole in talking about 80s sci-fi movies because I would really like that, but we shouldn't. Anyway, I'm very glad to have you here, Brett. We're going to be doing this show together. We're actually going to be joining forces again later on tonight for Game Busters, I hear.
It is Game Busters, my wife's birthday, and in honor of that, through much Fortnite coaxing, we convinced Jordan to not be so lazy and actually coordinate a group to play Among Us. So I think we've got like Lucid, Ben, Ray.
Nice.
Smacetron's gonna join tonight.
Cool.
So we will see. And John, are you playing?
Yes, I'm going to be playing.
Yes. So join us tonight at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/2AT.
Definitely do that. Also, I'll be on leading the first hour of the power panel. So stay tuned for that as well. But with that said, we've got some massive stories. One of my favorite stories of the entire year so far. It's only February, so I feel very comfortable saying that. We're going to be leading off the show within just a minute. So what I need you to do, hit the like button, share the stream, algorithm, blah, 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 all that stuff. And you can reach out to us if you want to, you know, remind us of something, tell us about breaking news, maybe give us a little bit of a giggle or possibly win a Blue Apron gift card. You can set us in comments, tweets, and super chats and all that. And with that said, Brett, are you ready to start this thing?
Sure.
Okay. Why was that so calm? Oh, also,
I don't know. Like, later on. Brian Unger's on the show. Is he today or is it that in a few weeks? It's one of, when is he? I don't remember.
We're going to find out for sure, but that is very exciting. I hope that he is. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into this thing. As part of the continuing legal drama between Fox News and Dominion Voting Systems, a trove of some of the wildest text messages that I've ever seen in a political scandal have now been released. And they reveal many juicy things. But the top line is this. Basically, everyone at Fox News knew that the lies that they were telling, the lies they were amplifying, the people they were working with who were also doing the lying about the election, they knew it was all lies and they allowed it to go on anyway. For different reasons, for different people, and we'll dive into those different motivations, but this is some fascinating stuff. In case you're new to this ongoing legal drama though, just to set things up, understand that in the days and weeks after the 2020 election, Fox News hosts and guests baselessly suggested or flatly claimed that Dominion's voting machines were part of a conspiracy to steal the election from Trump, possibly with an assist from Italian satellites or the ghost of Hugo Chavez or whatever. And as a result of that, Dominion has sued Fox News over its coverage and is seeking $1.6 billion in damages. Now, they're also pursuing legal, a legal filing against other media companies as well. But the Fox one is a big one because they're a massive part of the media landscape. So I want to jump into some of these text messages. And we're going to start off not with the ones that are most consequential, but with the ones that are, I think, the funniest. Because one thing became clear as you browsed these text messages. These people had no respect for Rudy Giuliani. Rupert Murdoch sent a subject line and an email, watching Giuliani, and the text was really crazy stuff and damaging. Giuliani taken with a large grain of salt, fact that Rudy advising Trump really bad. And then you have other people. So Gary Schreier at Fox says, Jenna Ellis sounds downright sane next to Rudy. Laura Ingraham says, Rudy, such an idiot. Sean Hannity, Rudy is acting like an insane person. He's also an effing lunatic. John Fawcett, a producer on Lou Dobbs Tonight, says he is so full of, well, you can finish that sentence yourself. And another producer for the same show says, keeping in mind his insanity lately. So look, again, we're gonna get into more important stuff, Brett, but we know that like regular people and Democrats have no respect anymore for Rudy Giuliani, but it is great to sometimes find out that outside of your bubble, no, people on the other side feel largely the same.
They still humored him, man.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's every true. Angle you look at it from is just bad for discourse in America. This is what they were saying behind the scenes. This is vape Hannity. This is Hannity when they come back to him and he's all vape nation, like, and then he like throws it off screen. Oh my God. Yeah, he's like insane. This is, we'll do it live, Fox News. Mm-hmm. This is what they're saying behind the scenes. Now, there's a lot of double speak happening. There's a lot of your double talk or whatever it is happening at Fox News. And it signals who has power. And at the point when they were doing this, the power lay in the hands of the knowingly unhinged right-wing lunatics that were storming the Capitol. And rather than do the job of journalists, we now have proof, in my opinion, that Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, all the stuff we say about them, which is they hate their viewers. They think their viewers' actual leaders are morons, and they will just completely lie to everyone so that they can keep the bright lights in their face and the cameras pointed at their gaping maws as they spew nonsense.
Yeah, that's vibrant imagery, but totally true. They have no respect for the viewers whatsoever. And as we'll get to later on, they're also terrified of their viewers too, which is definitely fun. But anyway, I just wanted to start off with this Giuliani stuff because I love the idea that somewhere in like a red wine haze, Rudy Giuliani is laying out of bed with his pants around his ankles and just reading, just doom scrolling what all of these people, who I'm sure some of which he thought were friends of his, actually had to say about him. That's what you get with working with a proto-dictator to overturn democracy. Anyway, I want to focus now on someone arguably far more important. Tucker Carlson has been outed indisputably as a person who doesn't believe anything he says and has no respect for his viewers. That has happened multiple times in the past. His official legal defense as a host of Fox is that he doesn't actually talk about the news. You should not trust anything that he says. It's just a character that he's playing. And if you're a right winger, and the fact that doesn't bother you has always seemed super weird to me. But I want you to reckon with what's been unveiled with these new messages in this Dominion lawsuit. So first of all, here is what he actually thinks about Donald Trump. Here are messages he was sending following the insurrection. After January 6th, he goes on to text this guy, I believe it's, no, it's not Glenn Shear, Pfeiffer, that Trump is, in his words, a demonic force, a destroyer, but he's not gonna destroy us. So it's good to see what Tucker really thinks. He thinks that Trump is a demonic force, a destroyer. And I want you to bear in mind, he's saying this in the context of what he's seeing on the screen on January 6th. But importantly, he doesn't care about democracy being destroyed. He only cares about Fox News. He's not gonna destroy us, we're gonna be fine. Oh, maybe he's going to get Mike Pence hung or something, but we're going to be okay. He says, we're not going to follow them. What Trump's good at is destroying things. He's the undisputed world champion of that. He could easily destroy us if we play it wrong. So he's terrified of his reputation being destroyed. Now, look, I think that if Trump had turned on Tucker Carlson, he probably could have destroyed his reputation. But that is what Tucker Carlson really thinks of Donald Trump. And while much of our discussion on today's show is going to be about unveiling what these Fox News hosts really thought about the results of the election, I want you to pause and bear in mind what he really thought on January 6th, Tucker Carlson. He thought that this was the actions of a demonic force, an avatar of destruction who was wreaking havoc. And on basically every broadcast since then, he has pretended that it was no big deal. It was nothing. Why are you focusing on this? It was probably Antifa. Nah, these are conspiracy theories. You're really worried about white supremacy? In the moment, he was calling him a demon for what he was seeing. There is perhaps no one who has been more fake on air in modern history than Tucker Carlson. Right, what do you think about this?
Tucker Carlson has been canceled, not in the colloquial sense of today. He's been canceled for real. Like, he lost shows before on other platforms when he was this, you know, bow-tied moron, this pleated pant with fluffy hair. He got canceled from Crossfire by Jon Stewart. And ever since then, he has resolved to do whatever it takes to stay on television. The lie reveals the truth. We know that he is lying. The truth is his discourse in service of power is to stay in front of the camera, yep, in charge of the message. Now, the Trump viewers, whether they know that or not, Tucker being Tucker is useful to them insofar as they think Tucker's on their side. Because the fact is that Tucker is just parroting their message because he doesn't want to fight against it. Because as he admits himself, he knows he will lose.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's why we very frequently pointed out times when Tucker Carlson sort of between the lines has criticized Trump, or between the lines has tried to train his audience to see the stuff that people like Trump are doing as bad, but he will not actually attack him because he is still to this day terrified.
In speech and debate, they always say this stupid thing, or whenever you're taking like a seminar on how to be a person in a professional setting, they do this thing. They go, if someone does this, they have someone come up on screen and the other person puts their hand and then they push against each other and nothing happens. And they teach you in your discourse to actually redirect. So if someone pushes against you and you let them go, you can actually have them push the direction you want. That's what Tucker's doing every time he disagrees with Trump. He does it in a way where he feels that there's not gonna be pushback. Every other moment he's trying to give where it doesn't matter. That's a Ben Shapiroism, you know, give them the points that don't really matter. And then he tries to counter when possible. And that's his whole jam. He's been doing it since he came back to Fox News, stepping in for the original We'll Do It Live psychopath Bill O'Reilly.
100%. Yeah, that's what it is, rhetorical judo. Okay, so all of his claims about the election, and we're gonna get to more of those, fake, and he knew that it was fake. This is all about maintaining an audience and not caring ultimately what happens to that audience. Like, that I understand we're mostly gonna be criticizing like these personalities, Fox News generally, Donald Trump or whatever. And look, there are a lot of people in the audience that willingly suspend disbelief because it's convenient to believe things that there isn't evidence for. But it also kind of sucks to have very influential, powerful, rich people knowingly deceiving people and getting them to believe crazy things. That sucks too. So let's zoom out a little bit. One of the top line takeaways from these new text messages that Dominion has revealed is that the people at Fox did not believe any of this election conspiracy garbage that was being spread on their airwaves, as well as the airwaves of places like OAN, Newsmax, and independent right-wing media. So I want to give you some examples of that. Carlson, at one point, Tucker Carlson, texted a redacted name, quote, that it was shockingly reckless to claim that Dominion rigged the election. If there's no one inside the company willing to talk, or internal Dominion documents or copies of the software showing that they did it, and as you know, there isn't. He said that Sidney Powell was lying and called her a blankety bitch, I'll say that. Laura Ingraham said in a group text with Carlson and Hannity that Powell was a bit nuts. Sean Hannity said he didn't believe it for one second when he heard her claims. And so, look, if I vaguely recall that in the wake of the election, Tucker Carlson, I think, out of all of them, said a few critical things about Sidney Powell. I believe that that is the case, in which case, very mild credit to him. The issue was he has still been a very active participant in more generalizable, less legally actionable claims of voter fraud. If he is nuanced, it is only in that he has been, you know, CYAing when it comes to the claims. He doesn't want to make specific claims that can be fact checked about specific companies that could sue him, but he still does want to be an active participant in spreading the idea that the election has been stolen. But as you saw on that, it's not just him. Laura Ingraham didn't believe a lot of this stuff. Sean Hannity didn't believe a lot of this stuff. After hearing that host Lou Dobbs ran false information about election fraud, one producer responded, Jesus Christ, does anyone do a blank simple Google search or read emails? And the frustration of the producers was a constant throughout these. One of Laura Ingraham's producers says that her interest in false Dominion voter claims is gonna give me an effing aneurysm. So that's fun. No word on if this producer actually passed away. And according to Dominion's lawyers, not a single Fox witness testified that they believe any of the allegations about Dominion are true. So this is hosts, this is producers and stuff like that, execs. Indeed, Fox witness after Fox witness declined to assert the allegations' truth or actually stated that they do not believe them. So that leaves us with a big question. If nobody on camera, no one behind the camera believed any of this stuff, why were they participating in it? And there are a couple of, I think, compelling explanations for that. Tucker Carlson, throughout a lot of this, is very clear that he's worried about reputational loss for himself, but also for the company. He talks about that constantly, that if they're not seen to be on the right side of this, that they could very much be hurt. He says, do the executives understand how much credibility and trust we've lost with our audience? We're playing with fire for real. An alternative like Newsmax could be devastating to us. And he in particular was criticizing things like them being the first to call Arizona for Biden, which was a accurate call of a true result. He hated that because the audience hated that. This wasn't about reflecting truth. This was about being seen to be pure amongst the audience. And he wanted to take action as a result of his fears. He called for a Fox reporter to be fired because she did an accurate fact check in a tweet. She wasn't wrong in any way, but he said that she had to be fired. It needs to stop immediately, like tonight. It's immeasurably hurting the company, this accurate fact check. The stock price is down, not a joke. But maybe even worse than what he said about her, the CEO, Suzanne Scott, weighed in and said that they're, Sean texted me, blah, blah. He's standing down and responding, but not happy about this. Don't understand how this is allowed to happen from anyone in here. She said that Heinrich, the reporter, has serious nerve doing this. And if this gets picked up, viewers are, quote, going to be further disgusted. And the tweet was taken down. So Tucker reached out about this. There's no word that she was fired, to be clear. But the CEO jumped in and said, and made very clear why they were pushing back. Not that it was inaccurate. It wasn't. Heinrich was right. But the audience didn't like it, so it had to go. Brett, what do you think? I know that's a lot.
This is, I don't know if you saw, what is it, Dr. Strangelove, where they go, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. Tucker Carlson is running around going, you can't tell the truth here. This is the newsroom. That's exactly what he's doing. And so it's funny because we've been doing our like responsible journalism trainings with all the producers. And in it, it's basically like, if you realize there's a mistake, I mean, we didn't say this because we've done it before, but if there's a mistake, you correct it. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Because a lot of reasons. One, you have to have a soul, right? In their case, they don't. But the other is like legal consequences. If you like in every law is the word knowingly. This is the knowingly part. This is the malicious part. This is the part where they have to prove that there was malice. And it seems like Tucker Carlson was running around maliciously saying the more important thing than the truth and then the reputation of Dominion, which we have very clearly with the word news in the bug at the bottom of the screen pretended the opposite of the truth about, which is a lie. The more important thing than that is reputation of him. And that is a malicious intent, in my opinion, in my analysis of that situation. And I don't think a jury would disagree with me. And so he's in that position where, and he put everyone in it. And it's so delicious that the truth is actually coming out.
Yeah, 100%. And it really, like, he seems to be among the hosts, maybe the most out in front worried about this. Although he did communicate with Sean Hannity about their fear specifically about Newsmax. And by the way, it's been 2 years. But in real time, we were talking about this, about how Newsmax was gaining viewer share and how that was going to inspire crazier and crazier conspiracy theories on the part of the right. And not just in election stuff. That was one of the reasons why I believe I was one of the first people to predict before it happened that Tucker Carlson was going to fearmonger about the vaccine, something which at that point seemed crazy. It was because of their fear of the fact that they were losing viewer share to Newsmax. And by the way, like, it isn't just Tucker. I'll give you one sec. This is the CEO, Suzanne Scott, at one point messaged Lachlan Murdoch and said, viewers going through the five stages of grief. It's a question of trust. The AZ call was damaging. Remember, the accurate call was damaging. But we will highlight our stars and plant flags, letting the viewers know we hear them and respect them. Yes, but needs constant rebuilding without any missteps, he responds. Yes, today is day one and it's a process to win back viewers who have lost their minds because you told them the truth. They understood from top to bottom the producers, the hosts, and the CEOs exactly socially and politically what was going on. And they instituted a plan to try to win people back and never discuss them again.
Tucker did this. Tucker was the one running around and making all these demands and making all these statements because he's the smartest. Because he's the smartest one there. And he knows exactly how to play it. He grew up in these gilded age, high ceiling drawing rooms where they come up with, you know, the deep state solutions to the problems that face the rich. Mm-hmm. And how to manipulate the masses. That is what Tucker Carlson is great at. And then when they say the word trust, if you go back to that graphic, it's like it's a matter of trust.
Yeah.
Trusting them, it's not trusting them to tell the truth. The reason the viewers lost trust in Fox is because Fox refused to lie for once. So the viewers, we've established in the eyes of the CEO of Fox News, the viewers trust Fox News hosts to lie to them. And when they don't, they'll go to someone who will. And what's so ironic about that is how Fox News, their lies are all about how they're the only ones telling the truth. When we have proof, they are explicitly lying as a content strategy.
Yeah, 100%. I want to read just one more interesting thing. Well, there's so much good stuff, but we just don't have time. On the main show, you know, I'm going to host the first hour. We'll get into how Maria Bartiromo was won over to believe conspiracy theories by a person who thought they were a ghost of a decapitated child or something. We don't have time. We don't have time. But I thought this was interesting. On November 16th, Rupert Murdoch told Scott to read a Wall Street Journal piece about Newsmax, telling her, quote, these people should be watched if skeptically. Trump will concede eventually, and we should concentrate on Georgia, helping any way we can. We don't want to antagonize Trump further, but Giuliani take it with a large grain of salt. So that's funny there. The important part, though, is this is the chairman of Fox News saying, we are going to try to help in Georgia as much as possible. Can you imagine if MSNBC said that about special elections for the Senate? Or runoff in this particular case. This is just propaganda. We're going to try to help one political party win a current political election. That's bonkers. I know it doesn't matter. We all know what Fox is or whatever. But they are perfectly comfortable speaking in those explicit terms behind the scenes.
Do you think that the equivalent hosts at the other networks, CNN and MSNBC, share texts like this? Like,
maybe.
That last part about like, I want to help them win an election, I believe they send that. I believe Maddow's like, we got to help them win Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
We got to do that. But the don't tell the truth about this stuff, I don't think it's like that. I think Maddow believes what she's saying. I don't think there is this explicit two-facedness leading the masses around like asses. Like,
yeah.
I just don't think it's like that. I think it's horrible on the left, but it's out of touch, inside the beltway kind of thing. And I think that on the right, it is. Oh no, I know for a fact now on the right, it's like, oh, we know we're lying. We're doing it on purpose as we get into a car to drive us to our mansion. Yeah. As we pretend we care about whatever that guy is with the horns coming out of his head who just took a dump on Nancy's desk.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, this is just, they're political operatives. That's all it is. This is, you know, instead of organizing robocalls or instead of like setting up a rally, they do something in the cosplay of news designed to produce a political outcome. That's it. Okay, we need to take our first break. We'll have more on this on the Young Turks later on today. So definitely stay tuned for that and we will be right back. That's the closest to a fur baby is the sound of one making a dragon-like noise. Okay, everyone, if you're just joining us now on the show, please hit the like button so everyone knows we're live. And with that, why don't we jump into more news? The panel that's investigating Donald Trump and everything that happened following the election, specifically in Georgia, has now said that some of their witnesses apparently lied under oath. That's the allegation that's being made. Report from the grand jury says a majority of the grand jury believes that perjury may have been committed by one or more witnesses testifying before it. The grand jury recommends that the district attorney seek appropriate indictments for such crimes where the evidence is compelling. So there's a little bit of evasive kind of language there, in that we don't know exactly how many people they're asserting may have committed perjury. We don't necessarily have specific evidence to, believe or not believe the claim. And they're saying only do the indictments if you think it's merited against however many people you think it's merited against. So there are a lot of gaps still to be filled in here, but I want to give you some of the additional information that we currently do know. So these are just select fragments of the grand jury report. A lot of it has not been made publicly available. It doesn't identify any potential targets for the indictments. Judge Robert McBurney ordered that all sections of the report listing specific names and criminal charging recommendations be withheld for now. That ruling apparently represented a victory for Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, who's been investigating Trump and his allies since early 2021, and asked the judge back last month to keep these details secret because her charging decisions are, quote, imminent. And so how far could this go? Where will it stop? I don't know, Brett, but I'm on the edge of my legal seat. What do you think?
What is more pressing than imminent? Incipient, in progress, I guess. I don't know. I've had this, I've been on the edge of my seat for so long on indictments in these kinds of investigations that it's like wildly calloused in like a very specific
area. Just one
area.
Line of callous.
It's like a line of callous. Like it's bad.
Not good.
I never know what to do with these stories, to be honest. Like it's just like, okay. Yes, someone said that there is enough, that we're getting close to having enough evidence to say that someone perjured themselves enough to indict them. But is it just based on the perjury or is it based on wrongdoing? Those kind of perjury along the ways are like, they just amount to like a slap on the wrist. Is it enough for everyone to get that kind of catharsis that they want along the way? I don't think so anymore. I am now starting to enjoy like the weird responses from Trump that I'm seeing on Truth Social more than I'm enjoying the thought of him going behind bars. But then again, I would love to see that like court TV Trump is testifying to defend himself with Rudy Giuliani as his personal counsel. Like I'd be fine watching that.
And then Trump gets COVID again because Rudy farts on him. I would watch that. I would watch all of that. Yeah, exactly. Is it crazy the things you can forget in American politics? Anyway, the one other takeaway that's important from this is the jurors apparently shared a unanimous belief that there was no fraud in the 2020 election. We find by a unanimous vote that no widespread fraud took place in the Georgia 2020 presidential election that could result in overturning the election. So what is that? That's the 70th jury or judge that has decided that. I don't know. At some point, maybe we'll reach a critical mass. I don't know. Anyway, right. Since you said there was a different part of this story that you find more compelling, we're going to transition to that now. One might think that the grand jury in Georgia investigating Trump's claims about voter fraud and his attempt to overturn it there, coming out that there was both no fraud and that some of his witnesses, or the witnesses they called, lied, would be bad news for the former president. But he is an eternal optimist, and he greeted this news as a great victory for him on Truth Social. So I just want to read a couple of his bleats declaring victory. The long-awaited important sections of the Georgia report, which do not even mention President Trump's name. By the way, he wrote this supposedly. He said they don't mention President Trump's name. It's wild. Anyway, have nothing to do with the president because President Trump did absolutely nothing wrong. The president participated in two perfect phone calls regarding election integrity in Georgia, which he is entitled to do. In fact, as president, it was President Trump's constitutional duty to ensure election safety, security, and integrity by asking for him to find 11,000 votes. It's in the Constitution. You can check it. You're supposed to ask for enough votes to be found to overturn the results of the election. He goes on to say, between the two calls,
there were many officials and attorneys on the line, including the Secretary of State of Georgia, and no one objected, even slightly protested, or hung up. President Trump will always keep fighting for true and honest elections in America. Thank you to the special grand jury in the great state of Georgia for your patriotism and courage. Total exoneration. The USA is very proud of you.
It's like
they said there was no voter fraud and that the witnesses lied. I didn't know that this was an option. Like, the judge declares you've been found guilty and you say, thank you for releasing me back into the wild. You're very courageous, judge.
He doesn't know what the difference is between a grand jury and like a jury and a trial jury. Grand jury is just like, what do you guys think?
Yeah,
is it even remotely stinky? And they go, yeah, it's stinky. That's what they just did.
Yeah.
They don't say like beyond the shadow of a stink. They're like, no, this is just, yeah, you guys, wow. You should look into that. You should definitely indict on that. That's what happened. And they said, yes. And like the wording of this is so weird. Like, it didn't pass the Turing test for me, right?
I think like it's not even Bing chatbot actually that wrote that.
Yeah, it's like it's like when you do a karaoke song and it doesn't say like by the Rolling Stones, it says like in the style of the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
you're like, I don't get it. It's like a tribute band and not like the band itself, where they're like, all right, so this is a lawyer writing this. But we have to like pepper in the hits. Yeah. Like, oh, we'll say the words perfect phone calls all the time.
Over and over. He loves his catchphrases.
It's so dumb. And like when you're a Trump stan on Truth Social and you read this, what do you think? Do you think that's him? Or are you like, no, I know that's not him. But then it's a lawyer who's writing for him. What are you there for? Are you like, are you there for him talking to you? You should be. Or are you there for his lawyer kind of doing an impression? Yeah. This is like those guys in Iraq who kind of look like Saddam Hussein and like walked around and were like, hey, I'm a body double. Mate, like that's what it is.
Yeah. But it has to be him. Unless it was a lawyer who knows that they're supposed to throw in things like 100% exonerated.
I think it is. And then the question, I have no doubt it is. And then the question is like, what else is he doing?
I don't know.
What's he too busy with?
Well, he's apparently busy setting up messages because we have a new one. Fake news trying to bring me down with their lies about voter fraud. Grand jury didn't find anything and so-called witnesses were just angry Democrats. I'm 100% exonerated and ready to keep fighting for the truth. Hashtag MAGA, hashtag not guilty, hashtag witch hunt. That was generated by ChatGPT and it sounded exactly like him. Great job, AI. You can replace the president soon, at least in his capacity.
Did you just generate that?
I told ChatGPT, write a tweet in the style of Donald Trump responding to a grand jury stating there was no voter fraud and witnesses lied. And that's what it produced. It's not bad technology, honestly. wait, I should become a right wing grifter, but purely through AI. That would probably be a lot of money. Anyway, with that said, we have a lot of other news to get to. So I think it's time for us to jump into this video.
We'll have term limits for Congress. And mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over 75 years old.
So that is Nikki Haley drawing some attention, I guess, to her run by stating that we should have these term limits, but also our politicians are too old and they need to have their brains checked, which is a little bit of a savvy move on her part, because most right wingers will read that as a criticism of Dark Brandon. He's really old, his brain is mush. But she also set the threshold at 75, which also would include Donald Trump. So she's kind of taking a dig at him. But that's all obvious. She's also taking a dig at the vast majority of our politicians who are older than that age. And so they've since been asked to respond to it. Bear in mind, the group of people that she's including there is 1/6 of current US senators. I actually would have thought it was higher. Both presumptive presidential front runners and more than 30 current US House members. Both those numbers are actually lower than I thought they were. But anyway, here's what some of them had to say. Senator Jim Risch said, "Oh Christ, I'd have to think about that before I respond to that." And feel free anytime you want.
You don't have much time. You're 79.
Exactly. Get it out there. He's 79. Lindsey Graham says, "I think it should be lower. Anybody dumb enough to run for the president should have to take a test." That's him being folksy or whatever. I actually kind of like that response. But Chuck Grassley says, "I think you need to look at my last election. People knew me and my age, and I won by 15%. People know that I'm in a position to do the work." He won by slightly more than 12 points. And that was actually the most competitive reelection he's ever had since 1980, implying that this might be a little bit less of a vote of confidence of his age and more just the inertia of incumbency combined with a really right-wing state. Anyway, Brett, what do you make of this?
It's also like a lot of their voters are over 75. Their most reliable voters are older. I think this is hilarious. I think Nikki Haley and people who like Nikki Haley are the worst. I had a neighbor who was really into Nikki Haley, didn't know where she was from, just knew that he was a rich kid who very much was told that his brand of conservatism was one that didn't want any taxes. And yeah, he doesn't understand that like people like Nikki Haley need to be entertaining and they need to be fun if they wanna beat Donald Trump. And they're neither of those things. Like these are some, she is so boring and such like a cookie cutter Stepford, like, oh, I'm walking the walk and talking the talk, that she's getting out hilarious by Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, that doesn't usually happen.
It's so dumb. Like these, like, like that is all, that is 100% Mitt Romney's sense of humor, and he lost when he ran for president.
Yeah, that's true. No,
remember that photo of like Trump and Mitt Romney having dinner when Romney's like, "Maybe he'll make me Secretary of State," and Trump just turns around and goes, "No, I won't."
I know, I know. Oh God, what a sad, terrible move. By the way, Mitt Romney did respond to this too, saying, "I don't have any problem with that. That's fine." What was that great line that Ronald Reagan used against Walter Mondale? "I won't let your youth and inexperience become an issue in this campaign." He almost did exactly what you said he was going to do there. Dianne Feinstein said, "I don't have a problem with it." When asked if she'd embrace it, she said, "No, but I don't have a problem with it. Wait, what is it and where am I?" I might have added that last part. But if I asked her if she had said that or not, she wouldn't be sure. Anyway, the American people are pretty clear about this. 41% say that the age, this is vague, by the way, what do you mean by this? The age of politicians is a problem. People interpret that in their own way, but 41% say it's a major problem. 37% say that it's a minor problem. Look, I think that I have a nuanced view of this. I definitely don't think there should be any age cap where you can't run again. And I think that ideally, the voting public would evaluate the sanity and competence of their elected officials. They seem to have very little concern about those two things in practice, considering who they vote for. You know, Bernie Sanders is 1,001 years old, and he still is very much together mentally. Other people at a younger age might not be. So I don't think you can just draw like a specific line or whatever, but we should be a little bit more conscious about some of the things that can creep in as politicians have stayed in office decade after decade after decade.
No, I think they need to be tested after they win their election, and they cannot be removed based on their incompetency mentally. Mm-hmm. I think there just needs to be like on their chyron at the bottom of the screen when they appear, like, "This person failed a mental competency test and you voted for him."
Yeah.
Because that's it. I mean, I agree with Chuck Grassley on this. Like, people know when a screw's loose, or they know when someone's atrophying mentally, and they know all that goes into it. There's a lot about a candidate that makes them vote worthy in people's eyes. People aren't blind to that. They're just actually making a conscious decision to vote for this person instead of that person. Whatever gets you the win, you should be able to go with. And then next time around, if you feel that they don't have the mental competency in your mind, that should be in the same category as whether they're, you know, or that should be one of the factors in addition to like whether you agree with them on the politics.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's reasonable. So I don't think that's how most people will proceed. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna take our second break. We come back, we're gonna give you a bit of an update of what's going on following the train derailment of the past couple weeks and more after this. I'm never gonna request seeing a hairless animal on the show because I'm worried about what might come. Anyway, with that said, it is time to venture into truly deranged territory, starting with this.
Does this guy, Reagan, even know anything about the environment? Well, we looked into him, and the only reason he was nominated to run the EPA was because he promised to fight off environmental racism. Is this his idea of fighting environmental racism, spilling toxic chemicals on poor white people in Ohio?
Okay, so there's a lot there. First of all, the fact that he has said that he would fight environmental racism, it's a bit of a jump to then say that's the only reason he was put in the position. But I appreciate Jesse Waters making the effort of at least pretending that it was about the quote rather than, look, we know what he's doing. Michael S. Regan is black, thus he couldn't be qualified for the position according to someone like Jesse Waters. He had to be put there for something to do with race. And oh, also, I'm gonna claim that he's purposefully poisoning white people. Why? Because he intentionally spilled the chemicals that were released after the train derailed in East Palestine. That's deranged in like seven different directions at the same time. First of all, even if he is the head of the EPA, he wasn't running the train. That's insane. And that's also skipping over the fact that Jesse Waters is now openly claiming that it was an intentional derailment. We can also criticize that the conspiracy theory that it was intentionally derailed specifically to kill white people. That's the sort of race war part of this that he's so eager for. But the idea that it was intentionally derailed seems like it would require a little bit of evidence, Brett, but he can just state it.
We already found out earlier in the show with the revelation of text messages around Dominion that they don't mean anything. They're just being the worst they can possibly be on purpose. And it's weird. So Jesse Waters, I'll play that game too. Jesse Waters just turned against Reagan on Fox News. He turned against Reagan, anti-Reagan Jesse Waters. And also, Jesse, what's your last name? Waters. How do I know? And what is poison? Waters. How do I know you're not poisoning yourself, who are also is white? Joke's on you, Jesse. It's so stupid. Okay, what state did this happen in? This happened in Ohio. Who runs Ohio? Red state. It's a red state. It's got a Republican governor. It is just elected J.D. Vance. Then also, who was responsible for this? Deregulation, buddy. And who is the champion of deregulation? You guys. If I were to, before this derailment started, said, oh, there is this initiative that will end up poisoning people, a pipeline maybe, a railroad, you would say, how dare they put these unfair regulations on these corporations so that they can't put people to work? That is your line, your actions led to stuff like this. Your entire ethos led to stuff like this. And yes, there are people in the Democratic Party. There's a current president of the United States who's siding with the railroad company on this.
Yeah, which we'll get to.
And you should blame them for that. But you also, unfortunately, in doing that, would have to blame yourself and blame every day on Fox News where they say it's actually these left-wing environmentalist hippy-dippy regulators who are trying to cripple industry in America.
Yeah. Very frequently, I don't find Jesse Waters to be particularly interesting amongst right-wing media figures. But I do think that this is worth pointing out because, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, this story, and not just about Jesse Waters, this is part of now a right-wing media-wide campaign to make this entire environmental disaster about a war on white people. Yeah. This is why right-wing media exists. Like everything about right-wing media is encapsulated in this story. What do you actually have in reality? You have a horrific tragedy that didn't need to happen, that was caused by out of control corporate power that they gained by using lobbyists to buy politicians and stop regulations from being put into effect. Any reasonable coverage of this news would necessitate identifying that, and a solution would involve reining in that corporate power. That's what actually should happen in reality. So what do they need? Well, they don't want that. So what they need is a race war against white people, where some powerful elite black guy working at the EPA is secretly trying to kill your white babies. So let's focus on that. And it's amazing because not only does it allow them to cover a story that happened while Biden was president, so it makes Biden look bad, but it makes it seem as if they care about what happened to the people that live in the area. All the while, they are trying to make sure that everyone stays laser focused on the EPA, on Michael Regan, on all of these people who didn't cause this, so that they will not focus on Norfolk Southern, other railroad companies, deregulation that has happened over the course of decades, the state of employment in the railroads, as many workers have been fired intentionally to save money for the railroad companies, making it harder to maintain the trains and stop them from derailing. This is right-wing media. It's taking people who've already been victimized and will likely be victimized in the future and getting them to focus on how black people are trying to kill them so they won't realize that corporations are killing them.
Their highest priority, right-wing people like Jesse Waters, their highest priority is to create conditions that lead to these kinds of incidents. That is their highest priority. Everything else, they don't care. They want to be as rich as possible, and they don't care the actual toll that it costs the American people.
Yeah,
that's it. And then that's what they want. Then they come up with what they want to say that they think will help them gain the power to create that one condition. That's it. Every New York Republican, every rich blue city Republican's goal is to be as rich as possible. And every unholy romance they forge with the holy rollers of America is toward that one end. Everything else is a rhetorical compromise so they could deregulate industry.
Yeah.
And they come up with what they want to say in order to get Ma and Pa Poor White to go along with them. And the thing they want to say, one of those things is there's a war on white people. And take a second and think how long they have worked to get to the point where they can just say it. If they said that in 1997, they said that in 2007, if they said it in 2017, people would lose their minds. It wasn't until about 2018 in Trump's reign that they got to say. And today, who's saying it? Jesse Waters, Charlie Kirk, Donald Trump. They're all actually saying the words, there's a war on white people.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm so glad that you focused on that because like we're doing this segment to fight back against that. But yeah, you need to vocally point out how crazy it is. I just accept that. No, the right wing constantly talks about this, but we shouldn't. We shouldn't allow it to be normalized even to the extent that I did in the way that I framed this story. You're totally right. It is deranged storm front stuff that has now become totally normalized. In the same way that the craziest ravings of Alex Jones is now just what Tucker does on a Tuesday, the racism that used to be consigned to the radical fringe of the internet now is broadcast on Fox News to an audience of millions every night. With Charlie Kirk saying it was part of an intentional war on white people, they're doing it intentionally. Fox host Greg Gutfeld blamed wokeism and then said they're injecting race into everything as Fox News is injecting race into this to distract people. Donald Trump Jr. said that the people of East Palestine should pretend to be Palestinians, because then the Biden administration will actually pay some attention to them. Benny Johnson also said, if this had happened in California, everyone would be paying attention to it, but it's inside a red state and they supported Trump, so nobody is. Interesting little rhetorical question, all of them. Why is it that progressives were the first people to cover this story for many days before the mainstream media started talking about it? Since we hate red states and Trump voters more than anyone, why were we doing so much critical coverage to make sure that they get the help that they need? That's a great question that they, of course, will never engage intellectually with. No, the entire thing is it's a distraction. If you, as a right winger, accept the framing that they're saying, you accept all of this, what happens going forward? How does hating the EPA, hating Michael Regan, how does that make another derailment less likely to happen? Don't you think it's weird that they're disarming you at the very time when we should be focusing on protecting you in the future? Anyway, unfortunately, that's all the time we have this first hour. Lots more to come in the aftermath, everyone, so don't go anywhere. Brett and I will be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.